Katra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Katra AI. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. So today, we're tackling, well, arguably one of the most powerful guides ever written for finding mental peace, the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali. But we're not just looking at the original Sanskrit, we're actually digging into it through the commentary of a modern spiritual giant, Sri Swami Sakyidananda.
Yeah, and it's such a relevant dive, isn't it? Especially now. I mean, if you're trying to navigate, you know, the modern...
Absolutely. All the burnout, the anxiety.
Exactly. And Sakyidananda's take really shows that the solution isn't, like, out there somewhere. It's an engineering job, really. Inside your own mind.
An engineering job. I like that.
He presents the sutras, not as, you know, just physical exercise.
Which is what most people think of yoga, right?
Right. But as this really precise... systematic science, the science of consciousness.
That's the crucial difference. We focus so much on asana, the postures, but this original science, the way Sakyidananda explains it, it's all about calming the mind's, well, constant chatter. So if you listening feel overwhelmed or just restless, this text really maps out a practical way to find some genuine quiet inside.
Absolutely. And our mission today is basically to give you a clear path through Sakyidananda's interpretation. He makes these ancient ideas feel incredibly practical and honestly quite accessible.
Okay, great. Let's start with the man himself then. Who exactly was Sri Swami Sakyidananda?
Well, Sri Swami Sakyidananda lived from 1914 to 2002. He was a truly world-renowned spiritual teacher, and he founded Antigua Yoga. He really came onto the scene in the West in the late 1960s.
Right, a time of huge cultural shifts. People were searching for something deeper.
Exactly. And he had this really iconic moment, didn't he, opening the Woodstock Festival in 1969.
Wow, Woodstock in front of half a million people.
Yeah, calling for peace. For unity. It kind of perfectly summed up his mission, you know, taking this ancient wisdom and applying it right where it was needed in the modern world.
So what makes his commentary on the sutras stand out?
I think it's his incredible knack for bridging the gap. He keeps the deep wisdom of the Sanskrit text totally intact, but he translates these, let's face it, pretty dense concepts into language that clicks with a Western audience.
So he understood people weren't monks in caves.
Precisely. He knew his audience was dealing with jobs, stress, relationships, all the everyday stuff. He makes it relevant.
And that accessibility is key, isn't it? Because the sutras themselves are aphorisms, very short, packed statements.
They are. And Sakyidananda just unpacks them beautifully. He uses lots of simple analogies, sometimes quite funny ones, actually, and real-world examples. So these profound psychological ideas suddenly make sense in terms of, like, managing your commute stress or finding meaning in your work.
It sounds very practical.
Very. And his whole philosophy, Integral Yoga, it wasn't just about the mind. It was about developing everything in harmony, physical, emotional, intellectual, spiritual.
Sort of a holistic approach.
Totally. And underpinning it all was his message of interfaith harmony. You know, his famous saying, truth is one, paths are many. He saw the sutras as this universal toolkit for the mind, useful no matter your background.
Okay, let's transition to the book itself then. What's the core problem that Patanjali identifies in the sutras, and what's the big solution?
Well, the absolute central idea, the diagnosis, if you like, is that our suffering doesn't really come from what happens to us. It comes from the mind's constant churning, this relentless activity. Mm-hmm. Patanjali calls them vrittis, mental fluctuations.
Vrittis, okay.
And crucially, it's not just the fluctuations themselves, it's that we mistakenly identify with them. We think we are our thoughts, our anxieties, our anger.
Ah, right. So we confuse the temporary mental state with our actual self, like confusing the weather for the sky.
That's a great analogy.
Yeah.
Exactly. And the solution then is the definition of yoga itself. It's the systematic stopping, the cessation of these mental waves.
So yoga here means stopping the mental noise.
Fundamentally, yes. The book itself is this incredibly concise manual, just 196 aphorisms, but it's a complete roadmap for transforming yourself by exploring and eventually mastering your own mind.
And it lays out a structure for this journey.
It does, a very clear one. It starts by identifying the problem, this restlessness of the mind stuff, the citta. Then it outlines why we suffer the kleshas, these afflictions. And finally, it gives the prescription. The famous eight limbs of yoga.
The eight limbs. Okay, we'll get to those. And what's the ultimate goal? Where does this path lead?
It leads to Kaivalya, absolute freedom or liberation. This is the state where your true self, your pure, unchanging consciousness, which Patanjali calls Purusha, realizes it's totally separate from the changing material world, which includes the mind, Prakriti.
So realizing you're the observer, not the stuff being observed.
Perfectly put. That realization is freedom.
All right, let's walk through the chapters, the padas. Chapter one is Samadhipada contemplation. What's the focus here?
So this chapter really sets the stage. It defines yoga and describes a state of complete absorption, samadhi. Satchidananda points out that Patanjali starts with the goal, almost to prove, you know, that this state of perfect stillness is actually attainable.
Kind of like showing you the destination before giving you the map.
Exactly. And the most fundamental definition is right there in Sutra 1.2, Yoga's Chikavritti Nirodha.
Which means?
Yoga is the restraint of the modifications of the mind stuff. Yoga is stopping those frittis, those mental fluctuations.
And Satchidananda emphasizes that this means all fluctuations, even good thoughts.
Yes, that's a key point he makes. Even happy thoughts, planning thoughts, they still create ripples on the lake of the mind. If you want absolute peace, the ultimate goal isn't controlling what you think, but gaining control over the very process of thinking itself.
Wow. Okay. How do you even begin to do that?
Patanjali gives two main pillars right away, abhyasa and virāya.
Okay, break those down.
Abhyasa is steady, determined practice. Consistent effort over a long period. Vairagya is non-attachment or dispassion. Letting go of craving for results or outcomes.
Non-attachment. Does Satchidananda clarify that? Because it could sound like just not caring. Apathy.
That's a really common question. And yes, he's very clear. Vairagya isn't about becoming indifferent or numb. It's about recognizing that temporary experiences, pleasure or pain, success or failure, don't define your essential nature. You still make the effort, that's abhyasa, but you release your ego's grip on needing a specific result.
So you need both.
Absolutely. Satchidananda calls them the two wings of a bird. Practice, abhyasa, without detachment, vairagya, can just inflate the ego. But detachment without practice can lead to, well, just drifting. You need both to fly.
Makes sense. Chapter one also mentions obstacles, right? Things like doubt, laziness.
Yes, the antarayas. And it gives solutions. Like focusing the mind on a single principle or cultivating attitudes like compassion, karuna. It's quite practical even in this first section.
So if chapter one shows the goal, maybe for those already somewhat calm, what about the rest of us? Where does the real how-to begin?
That brings us squarely into chapter two, Satanapada, the chapter on practice. This is really the core instruction manual for the average person, the sataka, the seeker.
Okay, the practical roadmap.
It starts with something called Kriya Yoga, the yoga of action. This is like a preparatory stage, a way to purify the mind and body. It has three parts. Tapas, which means discipline or austerity.
Like inner fire.
Exactly, burning away impurities. Then svadhyaya, which is self-study, understanding yourself and studying wisdom texts. And finally, Ishvara Pranitana, surrender or devotion to a higher principle or the divine.
So discipline, study, surrender, that's the prep work.
Right. And then, before giving the main path, Patanjali does this deep dive into why we suffer. This is the analysis of the five kleshas, the afflictions or root causes of suffering.
We mentioned avidya, ignorance, being the main one. How do the others fit in? Can Satchidananda give us a sense of that psychological chain reaction?
He explains it beautifully. It starts with avidya, ignorance of our true self, that unchanging purusha. Because we're ignorant of that, as Mita arises egoism, this false sense of I-ness, identifying with temporary things.
It's like identifying with your job title or your possessions.
Exactly. I am a manager, I am wealthy, or even I am anxious. That's asmita. And once you have that false I, it immediately creates raga attachment, clinging to things that please the ego.
Like praise, success.
Right. And its opposite, devesha aversion, pushing away things that displease the ego.
Criticism, failure.
Precisely. And the final one is abhinavesha, the clinging to life, the fear of death, which stems from identifying so strongly with this temporary body and personality.
Wow, that's a powerful sequence. It shows how suffering isn't random. It's a direct result of that initial ignorance.
It really is. It's a conditioned pattern. And the method Patanjali gives to dismantle this pattern is the heart of the sutras, the eight limbs of yoga, Ashtanga Yoga.
Okay, the famous eight limbs, where do they start?
They start with ethics, the foundation. First are the yamas. These are five ethical restraints, things you don't do, like ahimsa, nonviolence, satya, truthfulness, asteya, non-stealing, brahmacharya, continence or right use of energy, and aparigraha, non-hoarding.
So basic ground rules for interacting with the world and others.
Essential ground rules. Then come the niyamas. These are five personal observances, things you do cultivate within yourself, like satya, purity or cleanliness, santosha, contentment, tapas, discipline again, Svadhyaya, self-study again, and Ishvara Pranidhana, surrender again.
So Kriya Yoga seems baked into the Niyamas too.
It is. These first two limbs, Yamas and Niyamas, create the ethical and psychological stability needed for the deeper practices.
All right, limb three is asana posture. Let's clarify this, because for most people today, asana means yoga class, right? Complex poses, flexibility.
Right. But Patanjali's definition in Sutra 2.46 is incredibly simple. Sthira Sukham Asana. Posture should be steady and comfortable. Satchidananda really hammered this home. The main point of asana in the sutras is not physical fitness or acrobatics. It's about training the body to sit still without pain or fidgeting for extended periods.
Stillness for what?
For meditation. The subsequent limbs. Asana prepares the physical vehicle.
Okay, so after asana.
The path turns progressively inward. Limb four is pranayama, control of prana or life force, usually through specific breathing techniques. Limb five is pratyahara, withdrawal of the senses from external objects. Kind of like consciously pulling your awareness inward.
Like closing the doors to the outside world.
Exactly. And these first five limbs prepare you for the final three, which are purely internal states of concentration and meditation.
And that leads us to chapter three, Vibhutipada, the chapter on accomplishments or powers.
Right. This chapter focuses on those last three limbs. Dharana, concentration, holding the mind on one point. Dhyana, meditation, an unbroken flow of awareness towards that point. And Samadhi, absorption, where the mind becomes one with the object of meditation.
Dharana, Dhyana, Samadhi.
Yes. And when you practice these three together on a single object, Patanjali calls that combined practice Samyama.
Okay, Samyama. And this leads to accomplishments.
It can, yes. Patanjali details various siddhis or supernatural powers that can arise from performing Samyama on different things. Mm-hmm. Things like knowledge of past and future lives, understanding the language of animals, super strength, things like that.
Wow. That sounds pretty tempting.
Exactly. And that's where Satchidananda issues a really strong, crucial warning.
What does he say?
He says, these siddhis, these powers, are the single biggest obstacle, the greatest temptation on the path to true liberation.
Really? Why?
Because they feed the ego. They're fascinating. They can seem like proof of progress, but they distract you from the real goal. Satchidananda uses this wonderful analogy. They're like beautiful flowers on the side of the road.
Ah, pretty, but they stop you from getting where you're going.
Precisely. If you stop to pick the flowers, admire them, or worse, start selling them, you completely forget about the destination, which is Kaivalya, freedom. He stresses that you should notice them, acknowledge them perhaps, but consciously ignore them and keep going.
That's profound advice. Don't get lost in the side effects.
Exactly. And that leads perfectly into the final chapter, chapter four, Kaivalya Panaya, the chapter on absolute freedom or liberation.
This is the culmination. What does it cover?
It goes deeper into the nature of the mind, consciousness, karma, and liberation. It talks about samskaras, these deep-seated subconscious impressions or tendencies that shape our actions and experiences, kind of like mental grooves.
Like our conditioning or habits.
Very much so.
Yeah.
And this chapter really drives home that crucial philosophical distinction we mentioned earlier, Purusha versus Prakriti.
Remind us.
Prakriti is the entire material world, including our body, our senses, and even our mind, thoughts, emotions, ego, memory, all of it. It's constantly changing. It's illuminated. Purusha is the illuminator, pure, unchanging, eternal consciousness, the true seer.
And liberation is realizing you are the seer, not the seen.
That's the essence of it. Realizing that the mind, however brilliant or troubled, is just a tool, an instrument, Prakriti, being witnessed by you, Purusha. Satchidananda might use an analogy like the mind is a movie projector, Prakriti, displaying all sorts of dramas and images.
Okay.
But you, the Purusha, are the light bulb inside the projector, the consciousness that allows the movie to be seen, but you remain untouched by the drama on the screen. Liberation is realizing you are the light, not the movie.
That's a helpful image, ending that false identification. Okay, we've covered the structure. Let's try to boil this down. What are the absolute key themes or messages someone should take away from Satchidananda's interpretation of the sutras?
Okay, theme one, I'd say, is the mind is the architect. This is hugely empowering. The core message is that your experience isn't primarily dictated by external events, but by how your mind processes them.
Yeah.
An untrained mind creates suffering. A disciplined mind creates freedom.
So inner mastery is the key.
Absolutely. Satchidananda constantly brings it back to mastering your reaction, not trying to control the uncontrollable world outside.
Right. Theme two.
It has to be that ignorance, avidya, is the root. We touched on this, but the aha moment is realizing suffering isn't just bad luck. It's fundamentally a misperception.
Yeah.
It's mistaking the temporary exterior, your job, your mood, your social status for the permanent, your true self.
Yeah.
Once you see that mistake clearly, the whole structure of suffering starts to wobble.
That's a game changer. Okay, theme three.
The primacy of practice and non-attachment. Those two wings again.
Yeah.
Avyasa and Vairagya. You simply can't get there without both. Satchidananda emphasizes the disciplined practice of Avyasa. Without letting go of the ego's desires, Vairagya just makes you a more skillful egoist. And detachment without effort is just inertia.
So you need the engine and the steering wheel.
Good one, yes. And finally, theme four, progressive methodological development. Liberation isn't some random miracle. Patanjali lays out the eight limbs as a clear step-by-step, almost scientific path. It shows that freedom is achieved through systematic, diligent effort. It gives you agency.
A structure for growth. That makes it feel achievable. Okay, the sutras are aphoristic. Let's touch on a few memorable lines that Satchidananda really highlights.
Definitely. We have to start with the definition itself, 1.2. Yoga is chittavritti nirodha. Yoga is the restraint of the mind's fluctuations. Satchidananda uses that image of a lake. When the ripples stop, you see the reflection clearly. Still the mind, see the self.
Simple, profound. What else?
For anyone doing physical yoga, Sutra 2.46 is essential. Sthira Sukhamavasana. Steady, comfortable posture is such a vital reminder from Satchidananda to bring the focus back from just physical prowess to the real purpose, creating a stable seat for inner exploration.
A spiritual check-in for modern yoga practice.
Yeah.
Got it. Another one.
I really like Sutra 2.1 seeds. Heyam dukkham anagatam. It means the suffering which is yet to come can and is to be avoided.
Wow, that's incredibly empowering.
Isn't it? Satchidananda presents yoga not just as a cure, but as a preventative science. It tells you that future suffering isn't inevitable. You have the tools to change your trajectory, to architect a different inner future.
Love that. Architect of destiny, and maybe one from Satchidananda himself.
His simple, brilliant summary captures it all. If you feel bound, you are bound. If you feel liberated, you are liberated. Ultimately, he taught, freedom is always available as a state of mind, regardless of anything else.
Powerful. Okay, let's bring this right down to earth. How can someone listening right now apply these ancient ideas in their, you know, busy modern life? Let's talk real life applications.
Great. Let's start with stress and that feeling of being constantly bombarded, information overload, Zoom fatigue.
Yes, please.
Pratyahara, sense withdrawal, is the direct antidote. And Satchidananda makes it practical. It doesn't mean locking yourself away for weeks. It means consciously taking even just 5 minutes. Turn off the phone, close your eyes, maybe focus on your breath. Give your nervous system a mini vacation from input. It resets your attention.
A mental vacation. I can do 5 minutes. What about focus in getting things done?
Dharana, concentration, is literally brain training for focus. Every time you practice holding your attention on one thing, your breath, the task, anything without letting it wander off constantly, you're building mental muscle. Satchidananda would say you're training for a super focused mind, which directly translates to better work, better flow, more efficiency.
So meditation isn't just relaxing, it's performance training.
In a way, yes. And think about relationships. Applying the yamas like ahimsa, non-harming, not just physically, but in your words, and Satya, truthfulness can revolutionize communication. Being mindful of speaking truthfully and kindly builds incredible trust with colleagues, family, everyone.
That makes sense. Moving beyond just not lying to actively communicating ethically.
Exactly. And finally, emotional intelligence gets a massive boost from understanding the kleshas. When you feel anger bubbling up, instead of just reacting and saying, I am angry, you can learn to observe it. Ah, there's that pattern of devesha, aversion, maybe rooted in some ego asmita thing.
So you create space between the feeling and the reaction.
Precisely. That space allows you to choose a wise response instead of just acting out a conditioned pattern. You stop being run by your emotions and start understanding them. That's huge.
It really is. Okay, as we wrap up, what's your personal big takeaway from revisiting Satchidananda's take on the sutras?
For me, it's that deep, profound sense of empowerment he conveys. His commentary constantly reinforces that you aren't just a cork bobbing on the waves of circumstance. You are the architect of your inner state. He makes this ancient, complex psychology feel like a deep, compassionate, user-friendly guide written just for you right now.
Yeah, that accessibility is incredible. My final thought is similar. It's the realization, which Satchidananda makes so clear, that peace isn't something you have to achieve or find out there. It's actually your innate nature. It's already present, just hidden under all the mental noise, the vrittis.
It's always there.
And the whole practice, the whole path laid out in the sutras is really just about systematically quieting that noise so you can recognize the stillness that was there all along.
That recognition, that remembering, is the freedom. It's the Kaivalya Patanjali points to, and Satchidananda illuminates it so beautifully.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.